Listen to the voices of our world.
Inordinate numbers of Americans are either uninsured or only partially insured, and it's a major concern across the board.
I've seen people recently inoculated. They're physically wrecked. And these autoimmune diseases, you never recover from them.
The Canadian population is beginning to be concerned that we're going to be selling our drugs to the U.S. and not have enough here.
The agenda is getting that information before the public in order to have it rigorously debated.
Welcome to Voices of Our World, a presentation of this station and Mary Knoll. I'm Eileen Bott. Well, if you expected to get your flu shot this fall, you were either left greatly disappointed and vulnerable to infection, or you found yourself making plans to line up with many fellow Americans rolling up their sleeves for a shot in Canada. Speaking of injections, the story's finally getting some air that American soldiers, without any knowledge of risk, have been taking a revised anthrax vaccine since 1991, which contains an ingredient that may be making them sick. Stay with us and you'll get both stories, the troubling truth about vaccine A from veteran journalist Gary Matsumoto, and how do Canadian medicines compare to U.S. drugs from Dr. Phil Gold, executive director of the Clinical Research Center at Montreal General Hospital. Hippocrates may have died in 377 BC, but he's still considered the father of medicine. And more than 2,000 years later, physicians entering the practice of medicine continue to take the ethical oath that bears his name. Today there are various versions of the Hippocratic Oath, but they all pretty much include the axiom, I will prescribe regimen for the good of my patients according to my ability and judgment, and never do harm to anyone. Before a doctor promises to try to cure, a doctor agrees to first do no harm. But from 1932 to 1972, the United States Public Health Service, working with the Tuskegee Institute in Macon County, Alabama, documented the progress of 399 black men with advanced syphilis. There was a control group of 201 disease-free men, but the interest was in charting how syphilis progresses. So the sick men volunteering to be studied were given free medical tests, free meals, and burial insurance. What they were not given was the antibiotic penicillin that from the early 40s was known to knock out syphilis. Most of the men suffered and died, not knowing they could have been saved. On May 6, 1997, President Clinton apologized to the survivors of the infamous study for government conduct that was deeply and profoundly morally wrong. Now, in answer to a lawsuit filed on behalf of more than a dozen U.S. soldiers who were court-martialed for refusing to take anthrax shots, U.S. District Judge Emmett Sullivan has ruled it illegal to force the shots on the soldiers. The military has suspended giving the anthrax shots under the growing sentiment that the shots may even be harmful. Award-winning journalist Gary Matsumoto has reported from 32 countries on five continents and served as chief foreign correspondent for NBC Radio News. Matsumoto's new book, Vaccine A, follows the military switch in 1991 to an anthrax vaccine, not approved by the FDA, that troops being deployed in the Middle East were given without being informed that the drug was experimental. Here's Kathy Golden with Gary Matsumoto.
Gary, first off, how did you become involved in the Vaccine A story?
Well, Vaccine A is the Army code name for anthrax vaccine, the one that the Army used during Desert Shield and Desert Storm. And I became interested in this story because I was there covering the war for Nightly News with Tom Brokaw. And I was one of the embedded reporters before they started using that term. I was assigned to the 24th Infantry Division Mechanized out of Fort Stewart in Georgia. And when I came back, I noticed, like everyone else noticed because it became a national headline, that a lot of veterans coming back from the war were saying they were sick. Something out there got them sick. And I made a few phone calls to my fellow reporters to see, well, you guys experiencing anything? And what became clear in relatively short order that of the some 2,000 reporters who were out covering that war in 1991, none had this mysterious malady. And that started me asking questions. Well, if this were some environmental exposure that caused the problem, how come none of us had it? And then I came across some declassified documents from the Defense Intelligence Agency looking at the specific question of Gulf War Syndrome and where did it come from. And the DIA reports say that it could not have been anything out there. It could not have been nerve agents, for instance, because the chemical weapons exposure, which is one of the more popular theories, could not account for the fact that none of the people in the region have this disease. The Kuwaitis don't report it, the Saudis, and the Iraqis. Now, apart from the fact that they all fielded armies that fought in that conflict and were in the region where these troops could have been exposed to nerve agents released through the bombing of these Iraqi ammunition dumps and the demolition of them after the war, all the native people, the civilians who live in that region, would have been exposed too, and none of them are sick. Their own governments acknowledged that to the United States government as early as 1993. So something was going on here that was affecting troops coming home from the war, and yet there was no logical explanation for it. And then one more very big clue came up, and that was this. A lot of Gulf War-era troops who never left these shores developed the same diseases, same complaints, the rashes, the chronic joint pain, chronic fatigue, dizziness, things for which nobody could account for, and yet they were suffering from the same thing that their deployed counterparts experienced, and the only thing they all had in common was anthrax vaccination. Same is true for the troops who deployed. There were only four nations that report this mysterious Gulf War malady. It's Britain, Canada, the United States, and Australia. They're the only four nations that vaccinated against anthrax.
Were there ever family members that presented with some of the same kinds of symptoms, you know, showing that this could be communicable?
Yes, and the fact that family members started to complain about the similar diseases in some cases, not in everyone, but in selected cases, there were what appears to be clusters of these Gulf War maladies that were imparted to their wives and children of veterans who came back sick. Now, what I'm saying may offer a partial explanation for this. It does not solve that particular piece of the epidemiological puzzle. But however, it does point to a specific avenue of investigation that may prove very fruitful and has not been looked at. And what I'm saying in Vaccine A is that the troops over there did not, in fact, get the licensed anthrax vaccine. The clinical evidence, and there's a substantial amount of it, now indicates that they received the Army's new vaccine that has been in development for the last 25 years without the public knowing about it and without military personnel knowing about that. And beginning in 1989, this new vaccine contained an additive that is known to cause incurable autoimmune diseases in animals injected with it. And the identical diseases, and we're talking about diseases like multiple sclerosis and lupus, have been occurring in people too. So this is all consistent with the classified military documents that state explicitly that they were planning experiments on troops heading to Desert Shield and Desert Storm, and that, in fact, every large deployment of military personnel is considered, quote, a research opportunity. And I'm saying that while this was all well-intentioned, I think they wanted to save lives, they certainly didn't want to hurt anybody, that this practice of experimenting on the men and women of the U.S. Armed Forces is still going on to this day, and in this particular case has caused great harm.
I don't know, Gary. Something about this story comes eerily close to the lack of ethics shown in the Tuskegee syphilis trials, you know? How can the government proceed without the legal protection of informed consent?
Yeah, in fact, it's interesting that you mentioned Tuskegee because the military actually planned something that very similar to the Tuskegee experiment where black sharecroppers in the South had syphilis, and in order to observe the advanced stages of this disease, scientists and doctors of the U.S. Public Health Service left them untreated, did not give them any medicine to cure their disease when, in fact, these medicines were available. The Army planned an experiment, one with very similar parameters, for Desert Shield and Desert Storm. There was a disease endemic to the region called leishmaniasis, and the Army had two experimental medicines available for it. And in order to test how effective these medicines were, they were going to give one group of infected troops, we're talking about troops out there to defend the national interests of the United States, they were going to leave troops who had this disease untreated. They were just going to give them a vitamin placebo so that the unchecked progress of this disease in these untreated soldiers could be a means by which they could assess how well the experimental medicine worked. It's outrageous. But they're saying, ultimately, we need to do whatever we need to do to win a war if we've got an experimental vaccine that hasn't passed all the tests that we would normally run in order to determine whether this product is safe or not, even though we haven't done that yet, we think we can save more lives with this vaccine, this new one, than the old one. So that's going to help us win the war, because that's the chief objective. We need to keep bodies on the front lines, and if it means we're going to give them a new vaccine or a new drug, that's what we're going to do.
Even if no harm was meant, and even if they wanted to perform these kinds of immunization in, let's say, a prison, you would need a signature, right?
Yeah, you're right. But again, what the American public doesn't realize is that when the Tuskegee experiment, and there was another one that happened here in New York, on Staten Island at a school for the mentally handicapped called the Willowbrook School. And right about the time the Tuskegee experiment was exposed, the Willowbrook experiment hit the headlines, and that involved a former president of the American Pediatric Association and a medical professor at the New York University Medical School who was injecting live hepatitis B virus into many mentally handicapped children because he wanted to observe the course of the disease in these kids. And this was in the early 70s, and this became a cause célèbre in the media. And as a result, the medical experiments, even in prisons, as you pointed out, were stopped. Even when prisoners were volunteering, they could no longer volunteer for these experiments because of the backlash against this type of experimentation. Now, what the public doesn't know is that the civilian public health establishment kept a loophole open for this type of activity. That loophole concerned military personnel. If the Department of Defense could demonstrate that it had some sort of compelling need, and that need is very poorly defined, DOD could carry out classified clinical trials on troops and receive from the Department of Health and Human Services a waiver of informed consent in order to do this. So military personnel injected with new drugs and vaccines at the discretion of certain individuals at the Department of Defense could be the victims of experiments without them ever knowing it.
By now, soldiers and their families are talking with each other. Are they becoming aware and concerned?
No, they don't know about it. They do not realize that these regulations exist, and certainly based on what I've read from declassified documents from the United States Department of Defense related to experimentation in the military. And there's nothing in there that I've seen where anyone in the military medical command has informed military personnel that they could be subject to this type of experimentation. When people sign up and put on the uniform, they don't know this, and the military is not telling them.
Well, Gary, you know, no matter what's happening in the courts right now, I don't think we've heard the end of this story. We'd love to have you back at some point, so please stay in touch. Thanks for being with us today, Gary Matsumoto.
Oh, thank you very much for having me on.
Whether it's flu vaccine or Vioxx, do you ask questions before taking prescriptions or shots?
Log on to the Voices of Our World webpage, www.maryknoll.org/voices. There's a spot there for your feedback. I'm Eileen Bott, and you're listening to Voices of Our World. You can call us at 1-877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 1-877-MARYKNOLL.